Well, you know, Iran is within its rights under the nuclear deal to conduct a ballistic missile test. I would say it was very provocative of them to do it, knowing that the Trump administration does not like the nuclear deal. President Trump said so during the campaign that he might withdraw from the deal. Those statements have been moderated since then. But it's unclear to me, on the other hand, what this threat means. Putting on notice for what? There are hints of conflict in the air, both with Iran and in the East Asia sphere. So I think we are entering dangerous waters.
Well, in terms of another country and its own nuclear missile testing, North Korea has talked about being in the final stages of developing a nuclear weapon. And Donald Trump in January tweeted out, it won't happen. What is your take on what's happening in North Korea?
Well, North Korea, since 2003, has tested a number of nuclear weapons, or a number of times, I should say. And the general consensus is, monitoring through verification when there are seismic tremors after nuclear tests, the general consensus of people who monitor nuclear activities is that North Korea is now a nuclear weapon state. They have several, maybe 5 or 10 nuclear weapons. They are producing nuclear materials, plutonium, and perhaps enriched uranium as well. So they have tested missiles a number of times, and apparently they are making quite a bit of progress in the longer range of missiles. So a test of an intercontinental ballistic missile would be provocative and dangerous, and I think could lead in the direction of conflict. At the same time, there is no discussion of re-engaging North Korea or the terms on which they might be persuaded to stop. In South Korea, there's quite a lot of discussion of re-inviting the United States to reintroduce nuclear weapons in South Korea. You may recall that the United States had nuclear weapons in South Korea, I think, since the late 1950s, several hundred of them aimed at North Korea. And so North Korea has experienced U.S. nuclear threats in the form of nuclear weapons sitting across its borders until 1991, when they were withdrawn. Looking at the history of North Korea and when they're bellicose and when they are not, I think their top goal is to end the Korean War. They're not going to give up their nuclear weapons, but they may give up testing of an ICBM. Very, very unlikely to give in to threats. So I think there could be an approach, not guaranteed to succeed, if the terms of the agreed framework to end the war are put back on the table. That's my opinion.
What is your take on the general feeling that we are headed towards a major conflict somewhere in that particular region under this administration?
Well, certainly, Mr. Bannon has been, who's the senior counselor for President Trump, has been reported as having foretold or a conflict with China. Certainly, a conflict with North Korea if they do develop an intercontinental ballistic missile and successfully test it. That's not a foregone conclusion, but if they successfully test it, that possibility will rise. And as I said, there are not nuclear weapons on the in South Korea right now, and the South Koreans are asking for them to be, or many South Koreans are asking for them to be reintroduced, which of course would raise the stakes greatly. The North Korean regime is interested in survival. I think they're also interested in money, as we saw during the deal that North Korea had with the United States in the 1990s. So which way it will go will depend largely on how the Trump administration and South Korea and Japan and China manage North Korea and what to persuade North Korea whether they're going to change course from the rather bellicose statements they have been making.
I think there's very real concern as well with the reorganizing of the National Security Council, particularly Steve Bannon's involvement in that. And as you said, a lot of this bellicose rhetoric. I mean, a lot of people are feeling that some type of nuclear war is now out of the realm of dystopian novels and films and very much a possible part of our future.
Well, a bulletin of atomic scientists who's bored has watched these issues since Hiroshima and Nagasaki, since shortly after World War II. They have that famous clock, how many minutes to midnight, midnight being nuclear war. They moved their clock half a minute closer to midnight just a week or 10 days ago, indicating these rising nuclear dangers. But I think the situation with North Korea needs to be much better understood in this country. They're not a suicide bomber type of government. They're totalitarian, they're very brutal, they don't care if their people starve, but as a regime, they want to survive. If you look at the agreed framework in 1994, which had been preceded by North Korea, similarly bellicose behavior, making threats, threatening to withdraw from the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and threatening to make nuclear weapons. At the time, they did not have any. They were persuaded under the promise of a peace treaty, you know, end of hostilities with South Korea and the United States, money, assistance in energy, nuclear reactors, that would be used for power. They actually suspended plutonium production. They allowed international inspections. They actually suspended construction of two nuclear reactors that they were building for power, much larger ones than the one they have now, but which could also have been relatively easily used for plutonium for weapons. They agreed to suspend construction of those reactors in exchange for two reactors from the West that would be hard to make nuclear weapons with. So all reactors create some plutonium as they operate, but the U.S. Model of reactor, it's much harder to extract that plutonium. So they agreed, and eventually, within a decade, that deal derailed. And in my judgment, both parties failed to live up to the deal. So now we're in 2003, North Korea actually withdrew from the Non-Proliferation Treaty and tested a nuclear weapon. And now they probably have several, 5, 10 nuclear weapons with materials for more. And some missile capability, not yet intercontinental missile capability.
A lot of the concern, certainly in years past, has been what another nation might do in terms of launching a nuclear attack. Right now, there's very real concern about what our own leader could do, given the impetuous nature of Donald Trump. A lot of people are speculating about whether he is somebody who should have access to this type of weaponry. What exactly is the process? Is it just one person? I mean, having the codes to the nuclear arsenal, surely that's not enough to actually launch something.
Well, obviously, you know, there have to be Security Council discussions before a war is launched. If there is an imminent threat to the United States, such as Russia, say, launching nuclear weapons or China launching nuclear weapons, the president certainly has the authority to order a launch, a preemptive strike before U.S. nuclear weapons are destroyed. Both Russia and the United States, they're the only two countries to have, I think, well over 1,000 nuclear weapons on what are called hair trigger alert, that is ready to fire within minutes. So the decision time is very short, and many have feared, you know, senators, military people, that a mistake is possible. Now, in the case of North Korea or Iran, Iran certainly doesn't have nuclear weapons. They are under pretty strict inspections. It's unclear to me what the process would be for Mr. Trump to actually order the firing of nuclear weapons. He has certainly talked about it, but the U.S. policy since Hiroshima and Nagasaki has always been for the first use of nuclear weapons in any conflict. So in that regard, what Mr. Trump has said is not new. It happened under Truman, under Eisenhower, under all administrations. Even President Carter issued a Presidential Directive 59 during the Iran crisis in 1979, reaffirming the use of nuclear weapons in a crisis. Not a nuclear crisis, but in a security crisis. And of course, President Reagan also did that. NATO reaffirmed the first use of nuclear weapons in its 50th anniversary meeting here in Washington in 1999. So, but, you know, given the many different kinds of statements and the back and forth and the nature of the conversation that Mr. Trump has been having with world leaders, yes, it's more worrisome whether he might impetuously order something. It's unclear whether generals could refuse. Now, we have a Russian example in that regard, which is one of the reasons you and I are sitting talking today. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, and the Russian military had pre-authorization to use nuclear weapons in the Caribbean. And there was a cat and mouse game going on between the U.S. forces and the Russians in the Caribbean. And on one of the submarines where there were nuclear weapons, there was a move to fire nuclear weapons at the United States because they thought they were under attack. And they needed the agreement of several of the commanders on board. And one person said no. And that's why we're still sitting here. So these kind of problems can happen. And certainly, you know, Mr. Nixon, when he was president, said, you know, I'm going to pretend to be crazy and maybe order a nuclear attack. He wasn't going to order one, but he wanted the North Vietnamese to think he was crazy so that they would perhaps surrender. So the nuclear age has gone through kind of quite unstable and strange times, and it seems we may be back in one quite dangerously.
And it is always worth remembering that the US is still the only country that has actually deployed nuclear weapons against another nation.
Yes, of course, Hiroshima and Nagasaki were the only cities to be destroyed by nuclear weapons in war. And fortunately, that has not happened since 45, although we've had a lot of nuclear explosions and they've caused a lot of damage. Ask people downwind from Nevada or the Marshall Islanders or some people in Algeria or Polynesia, in the former Soviet Union, in Kazakhstan. A lot of people have been hurt, but in war, yes, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That was the last time.
Arjun Makhijani is with the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. He joins me, Maeve Conran, regularly for conversations on money, politics, and science.